Hello, and welcome back to the fifth episode of NBS BiblioTalk, the Coinbook Lovers podcast. I am Leanna Spurrier, and I am your host. I am a coin collector, not necessarily a coin book collector, so I'm here to kind of bridge the gap and make sure that anyone that we interview is accessible to everyone regardless of their knowledge of numismatic books. We are sponsored by the Numismatic Bibliomania Society, or NBS, who do specialize in numismatic book collecting, as the name implies. And they are a wonderful organization. You are welcome to take a look at their website. It is coinbooks.org. They have a weekly email publication as well as a quarterly print publication, the Esylum and the Asylum. However, we are here to interview an array of numismatic and bibliographic personalities. And today we will be talking to Scott Keller, who is a bookbinder. So he is not necessarily from the world of numismatics, but he does have a very different outlook from the book collecting side of things. So we've got a very interesting interview lined up. I would like to let you know up front, we had a couple small audio issues. They are fixed about 10 minutes into the interview, so just bear with us as we try to figure that out. At any rate, let's get started. So, Scott, would you like to introduce yourself a little bit and tell us about what you do?
Oh, certainly. I am a bookbinder in Chicago and a book conservator. I have been working here for a good long time in private practice, but my background includes being the collections conservator of the Northwestern University Library. And previous to that, I also had worked at the Newberry Library and also in private practice. I've been doing this for over 45 years, in and out of institutions. So that's what I do. That's who I am, I should say. It's been my lifetime profession and career and great love. I work with books. Many, many different kinds of books.
So how did you get started in the bookbinding business? It's a fairly niche area to get into.
I got started when I was around 18 years old as a hobby. A friend suggested it and noticed it in a book or in a magazine. And I just found it rather interesting, and I thought I'd pick it up as a hobby. And then I was looking for job opportunities. I just kept coming back to it. Like, I really like this. And I did more and more research and reading. And finally started visiting other bookbinders of various sorts. And even collecting a few hand tools. Because they were interested that I was interested, I guess. And developing a little private workshop. So that's how I got started. And then my first job... when I started looking for jobs in this area, was with Monastery Hill Bindery, which is a very long-established book bindery in Chicago here, with a very long history and some very interesting projects there. So that's where I was for the first 2 years of my employed life.
So what has a standard workday looked like for you across your career?
Well, there's a lot of variety, which, of course, is interesting. And there's always a challenge, sometimes several. So I might have, I very often will have 2 to 3 jobs in front of me on my workbench. And the reason for that is that there are numerous waiting times when one starts to work on a book to restore it or repair it, which is what I mostly do. And when that is going on and one thing is drying or has to wait for one thing or another, I can then turn my attention to another job. So that's kind of what the rhythm works with. Often I will try to combine different tasks. For example, I do gold embossing for book covers and labels and whatnot. So that often involves hand-setting metal type, which is then heated and embossed into titles and information like that. So it's fairly laborious, but I might spend a day or two just doing that if I've accumulated some jobs in that arena. So, and there's a lot more to it. Sometimes I will do new covers. Sometimes I will restore old covers. Sometimes I will be working on presentation bindings that have fine leather covers and decorated in papers. And sometimes I'll be doing, I do a lot of restoration of family Bibles. And that seems to be a regular source of need that people come to me with. But beyond that, everything is a new challenge. Each book has its own problems and its own functionality, and has to be studied and restored back to its usefulness. And in some cases, the book's original functionality was not good, was not effective, and it has to be slightly altered in order to make it functional for the future. So that's a few thoughts on what my day can look like.
That's interesting. The family Bibles had not occurred to me as something they would be working with, but that makes a lot of sense as an irreplaceable heirloom that's going to fall apart over the years. That's very interesting. What are some of your favorite projects that you've worked on over the years?
Okay. Favorite projects. Well, that's a very good question. I've done some more difficult projects. Sometimes I've received from one particular client, a business actually, these books of hours. And these books of hours, which your readers probably know about, are these intricately hand-illuminated and calligraphed books on vellum for the prayer life of the royalty back in the, I don't know, probably from the 14th to the 17th century and beyond. But they're very specialized and very carefully put together. And many times, the few times that I've worked on those, they've come to me with no covers whatsoever, so there's nothing to restore. So I've had to recreate what I thought would be something that is sympathetic or appropriate, if you will, to the actual text, which is the whole point of the book. The covers is, of course, subservient to the interior, but when you're dealing with an ancient artifact like that, you have to be very careful on what you do to reproduce the feel and the authenticity of what might have been done at the time of its original binding.
So would you say that those are some of the most difficult projects that you've worked on, or have others been worse?
Well, I could go on and on about that. I can usually restore, by some method, books that come in. Though recently, I had, a family Bible, and I took it, and I said that, I'll restore this. And then after they left, and I gave it a few days to ponder, I realized that it was impossible, that the leather had so far deteriorated that it could no longer be renovated in any way. And I had to come up with basically a facsimile binding that represented what the original had looked like with the client. And he was very happy with that. We were actually able to reintegrate an original metal clasp that had been on the original boards so that it all kind of moved together and brought a final result that approximated the look of the original. So there's a lot of ways of approaching things, and structure is very important to it. Other things that have been difficult are when I've been giving a project to work with, something like baseball glove leather, and figuring out how to use that to incorporate it into the making of an album. That was a recent one, and I had to come up with dyes to reproduce the look of those black embossings that you see on baseball gloves. And of course, this album had to do with, as you can imagine, baseball. But I had to come up with some thoughts and ideas and experimentation to work with the materials and also the finished look of the product.
Very interesting and unique project, it sounds like, with that one. What are some of the oldest books that you've worked with?
Well, I would say that probably the earliest that I've worked with is 13th century. It would be a Romanesque period. Certainly some in the 15th and 16th century. So yeah, I guess the 1200s, that would be the earliest, and then up from there. But I'm very often working on a book that is older than the founding of our nation.
What were the books, or at least one or two of the books from the 13th century that you've handled?
Well, very often they are of a religious nature, either the scriptures themselves or prayers. So a lot of times the books that at least have been handed down and preserved are of that character from that period. Actually, that period, the printing press wasn't even invented, so it was hand-inscribed on handmade paper in this case. Paper was still very rare at that time, but beginning to show up in certain parts of the world.
Have you done any work with any books about coins that you recall?
Yes, I have. I've actually, there was one a person who brought in a coin that he had in a little, of course, case to protect it. And then he wanted me to make an enclosure for that would both have the coin in the enclosure, but also the provenance and an inscription from a previous owner as to what made it, you know, particularly special. And I would put that on one side of the enclosure and the actual coin in the other, and then had a cover that was labeled identifying what it was inside. That's the way he wanted to have it kept.
Do you remember anything about what that coin was?
Well, this was a few years ago, and I really don't. I've done work on stamp albums also, and other objects occasionally, maybe a scroll. I've done a scroll, a closure for a scroll, I remember. Every once in a while, somebody will want a special made enclosure for a historical object.
Very interesting. So it sounds like most of your clients are private collectors or individuals. Do you do a lot of work with museums or libraries? Or I know you said you worked for multiple universities. Do you do work for them as well?
Yes, I do. I have been doing work for the Special Collections at the University of Chicago for many years. Also, DePaul University, their Special Collections. I've done work for other organizations and agencies, Chicago Tribune, the Archdiocese of Chicago, the American Dental Association. Places that basically have an archives of things that they truly want to preserve, and they can't simply photocopy this or microfilm it anymore. Or they want to do it both ways. Like with the Archdiocese of Catholic Church will bring me these crumbling baptismal records. And, you know, the paper was just horrible, and the edges are falling off. And they, you know, are desperate for preserving this information because in many cases, it's one of the little family records that they have that can be retrieved by the families, whether it's baptismal records or marriage records or death records. And we take those. And what we normally do when they're in such poor condition, it's impossible to reconstruct them as a book.
So then how do you approach that? What do you do with them?
Yeah, so what we'll do with these crumbling record books that are literally falling into falling apart, it's so brittle like cornflakes, is we will have them scanned professionally, and those scans are archived on DVDs, but then the scans are also printed physically on acid-free paper. And we'll take that paper, printed pages, bind that into another physical volume, so they now have the record both digitally preserved and also physically reproduced. And then we'll take the actual crumbled crumbling papers and put that in an enclosure. So they actually have three, if you will, copies of these records.
It's a very thorough solution for something falling apart at that point. They have plenty of different options, so hopefully it will continue to be preserved well. Let's see, is there a first project that you recall that was like a defining moment in your introduction to the field, or just something that kind of got you excited about it in the beginning?
A beginning project. That takes me back way far. I think I was first attempting to bind books out of a manual that I had found on bookbinding. And I found that very difficult if you have no experience, is to take a manual on a totally new craft and attempt to make it work. This was pre-YouTube. So my struggles with that only made me more determined, but I also knew I needed a lot of training. So I did get a good deal of training, both at wherever I was employed, but also other experienced bookbinders who were known in the field. I've pursued training on many levels over the years.
So have you ever received a project that was just beyond saving, that you couldn't do anything at all with?
There have been a very few instances where someone will bring in something that is so unstable that I can only suggest that they have it digitized and there's really nothing else that can be done with it. That's pretty rare, but maybe a photo album that is completely disintegrating and the photos are disintegrating. I tell them at that point that I could make an enclosure for just about anything, but I'm not a magician. So that occasionally does happen where I could try to stabilize it, but mostly make an enclosure for something in that order. I'm very honest, and people are very happy to know what I can and what I cannot do. One other example of that would be like school yearbooks. They are on that glossy paper, or have been in the past, and they get stored in basements. Well, basements get wet and the book gets wet. The pages stick together and they say, "Can you please, you know, save my yearbook?" And I'll tell them that I cannot. The pages themselves have fused together. And there's nothing to pry apart anymore. It's a block of paper and clay coating is what it is. So I just try to be very explicit and tell people what can and can't be done. And fortunately, those are very few of my projects.
So what is the typical cost to have a book rebound? I'm sure it varies greatly depending on the project, but...
Oh, no, sure. People want and need to know something along that line. Although And I will sometimes give people a general quote if they send me photographs, but I always call it a guesstimate as far as projects that require repair and restoration. However, if somebody says, "This book is perfectly fine except the cover, the cover's off. I don't have a cover. I need a new cover for the pages that are still connected and they're not torn. I just need the cover." So I can quote them a price for that. For an average size book, that's $120 for a hardback cover with a printed paper label. Gold embossed leather label would be around $165. Family Bibles generally start from around $600 for restoration on up from there, depending on how much damage needs to be reversed and how much work needs to be done. We can do the clamshell boxes for about $120 per box. You know, those are general costs for some general types of rebindings and repairs that we do in enclosures. Beyond that, you know, I give a very accurate quote if I actually see the book or the object here in the studio, and I almost always stick with the estimate that I can give that way. But like I said, if somebody's living in New York and wants some basic idea, send me photos, displaying especially the damage, and I will give a guesstimate, and that's usually not too far off. So I'm happy to do that as well. And then there are people who prefer to send me their book, and I talk to them on the phone after I've received it and examined it. So there's a few different ways of going about that.
How should someone go about contacting you if they do want to ask for a quote for something?
Email is you can call me or you can email me. Those are the two best ways. My phone number is 773-478-2825. And you can look me up on the internet. Actually, unfortunately, my website is under construction, but it's still visible. My email is skkellar. So that's skkellar at sbcglobal.net, sbcglobal.net. So there's a number of ways, but you can definitely contact me at any time and find me on Google or wherever. Scott Kellar, K-E-L-L-A-R, is my name, and I'm located here in Chicago.
Excellent. Most of our listeners, I believe, are collectors of numismatic books, so I imagine there might be a few out there who are looking to have some things rebound. So I'm not asking what the price of it was, but can you describe what the most expensive project is that you've worked on?
Well, if you're talking about a single book, it's one thing. If you're talking about a collection of things, it's another. When I do work for institutions, I mean, obviously, you know, it can go into the thousands of dollars if it's going to take me, you know, 3 months to complete. This is fairly rare. Large sets of books normally are expensive because they're a lot of books. So the range is quite extreme. I can sometimes there's a repair that only takes a recasing. If a book is loose from its cover, we can recase it for $40. It's really hard to say. Some people they come in with a book that needs a repair, and it can be surprisingly cheap or unfortunately expensive, depending on on the techniques and the time and labor that's required to actually finish the project.
Do you have any advice for our listeners about caring for and or shipping books?
Oh, sure. I would say probably this is fairly common knowledge, but keeping a book out of direct sunlight is quite important. The temptation to store them in attics or basements should be resisted because of dampness and excessive heat, both of which are enemies of books. I would say that shipping a book, bubble wrap or something equivalent, you don't want to add damage to the book before it even gets here, especially if it's fairly fragile. I think keeping a book supported on the shelf, especially if it's if it has certain fragility, so it's not leaning over and breaking the joints, is always something to keep in mind. Ultimately, if you have a very valuable book, I strongly encourage having an enclosure like a clamshell box, like I mentioned before. It's a relatively inexpensive way to truly preserve valuable books. I usually also recommend them for books that I've restored because after the restoration, there's still fragility in the original materials because you reused them. So the fact that it could be bumped or scratched or nicked is relatively high. So it's like an antique. You don't just throw it in your drawer. Encourage people to have one of our custom-made enclosures.
So what are the clamshell boxes made from? You've mentioned them a couple times. What material are they to help protect the books?
Yes, the materials, they're also called drop-spine boxes, but they're like a folding box. So they open, the book sits in the lower tray, and then when you close it, the upper tray folds over on top of it, and then it has a cover. It's very book friendly.
There's very little friction, if any, involved. Much more accommodating to books than, say, slip cases, which you have to like slip the book in, and there's friction on both covers, and you can see the spine on the shelf, et cetera, et cetera. Not a good way to treat a book. They're made of, our binder's board is the substrate, but then we have different cloths and leathers that can go on the outside, different kinds of embossing or labeling. The interior is lined with acid-free buffered paper, so that there's no danger of any ill effects from the materials to the book itself. There's never been a problem with that. So yes, bookboard cloth, of course, adhesives for attaching the cloth to the board, polyvinyl acetate, stable after it's dry. I think that about covers it.
So I know some of our listeners are probably authors as well. So would you be able to, for example, take a new book and like replace the cover with something fancier for kind of like a presentation author's copy type deal if someone was looking for that?
Yes, I could definitely do that. I did have a client who was an author, and he's fairly prolific. He every time he had a new book published, he would send me one copy for his library, and I would bind it in leather in a traditional style. So he'd have that looking a little more noble instead of just the paper cover on his bookcase. So yes, I can definitely do that. I can do it in the traditional way with the leather cover and the raised bands, or some people call them hubs, with tooling, gold tooling. I can pretty much get as fancy as you want to go. And I have examples of that that I can show people and hopefully have some of them on my website.
Very cool. So on the opposite end of the spectrum, do you have any advice for other people who are looking to get into bookbinding?
Oh, that's all good questions. Difficult. There is fewer and fewer resources for training in our country especially. There are people, determined people with the means, who go to England or France or Germany for training. And that's would be a great way to go, quite frankly, as far as learning the traditional skills of hand book binding and book restoration. Other than that, it's going to be a mentorship or an apprenticeship situation. Like I said, there's so few of us doing this, that could be quite difficult. As far as the training in our country, there is North Bennett Street School in Boston that has, I believe, a 1 and a 2 year course, in traditional fine binding. And I think they include conservation skills with that. That would be a place to look to, perhaps once one has some intermediate skills. Beyond that, there are just weekend classes here and there, but they're really not going to train you to be a bookbinder. You need to really immerse yourself in this type of activity. Getting a job in a hand bindery, if you can find one. I don't want to paint a pretty picture because it's difficult, but not impossible if for the person who's truly intent on learning this skill. I no longer teach classes because of COVID, so I can't be a resource in that regard. And I'm not sure where you could go for classes. There might be something out there I'm not aware of, though.
Has the internet impacted your business much or changed the way that you do things over the years?
Well, I do get people referred to me through, of course, my website, which, as I said before, is currently under reconstruction. People find me through Google, through Yelp, through word of mouth. I get referrals from local institutions that either know me or I do work for, or I'm friends with the conservators who who work at those institutions. But the internet has been of course, quite helpful because a lot of people, that's the first thing they do is they get on Google and see what's out there. It's helpful for that. But there's a lot of word of mouth that has also been helpful.
So have you seen the demand for bookbinding change much over the years?
I think that it has decreased a bit over time. I've been able to collect clientele over many years who have specific, you know, interests in collecting and know what I can do, and book dealers as well. And that has allowed me to continue to get enough work to keep going. But I would say that it has declined over the years. As I said, there was a particular bump in 2008 that I think everyone felt as far as downward business. The few bookbinders who have been doing this have been retiring, and I've been getting calls from out of state more and more. But it's a very specialized niche, and I think it's something that only a few people care about. Probably a decline in book collecting as well. But it's still, there is a stubborn group of people who still love books and still love the physical qualities and the fineness of materials and are the specialization of subject matter. And they need those books maintained and restored and preserved for that those kinds of interests. And of course, the institutions that maintain their special collections.
For sure. It's an important thing to be able to preserve. And I think it's excellent that we still have people out there who are doing it like you are to save these things for future generations so that they're still functional and usable and together. Time is not overly kind to books. They seem like a fairly fragile item going across centuries. Our listenership comes from the world of coin books. And so, you know, coins, they're metal, they're a little bit more sturdy. But I think it's really important that we have people out there who are able to repair books and keep them closer to their original state so they can continue to be used going forward.
Well, I'm sure that there are, numismatic books that simply have not been reproduced or digitized that are quite rare and, collectible. So that's one reason one might consider preserving or restoring those rare books that are out there.
For sure. There are a lot of issues in numismatics that had very, very few copies printed originally, just because it was such a niche area at the time when those early books were printed. And so like those are incredibly rare, and I'm sure a lot of them are not in good shape anymore because they're so old. So preservation is very important for those items because a lot of them have not been digitized yet. There is an organization, the Newman Numismatic Portal, that's working towards digitizing as much numismatic material as possible. I think you've done some work with them in the past, but that's still a work in progress. So that's very important to still preserve those items while we can. So I don't believe I have any other questions. Is there anything else that you would like to share or stories you want to recount while we're here?
Oh, geez. I think that pretty much covers what I can do here. But it's been a pleasure talking to you and having this chance to speak to your numismatic group. And I wish them well and hope everyone stays safe.
Great. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us. And to all of our listeners, if you have any bookbinding needs, now you have somewhere to go with them. So hope we can drive a few customers your way. And if nothing else, I'm sure we have helped educate some people on the world of bookbinding that is out there. So thank you very much, Scott. And that will wrap up our fifth episode of NBS BiblioTalk. We are now releasing episodes every other month, so we'll be back in December with our next interview. We have some very interesting things lined up for the coming year, so stay tuned and keep an eye out for those new episodes. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, rate, review, etc. We're always happy to have feedback, and thank you for listening. best of luck in your coin book collecting adventures.